Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. The time is 7 minutes after 11 a.m. on Sunday, April 11th, 2010. With me today is Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, and Senator Egan, and Co-Chair Hoffman will be joining us momentarily, and myself, Stedman. We have four items up today. We'll start with Senate Bill 139, Incentives for Certain Medical Providers, Senate Bill 174, Professional Student Exchange, Senate Bill 234, Extend Alcohol Beverage Control Board, House Bill 292, Grants to Disaster Victims. We'll go ahead and start the day's labor with Senate Bill 139 by Senator Olson regarding incentives for medical providers. This is the second hearing on this bill. We first heard this bill on March 31st of this year. The intent today is to adopt a committee substitute, have the sponsor speak to the bill, and if members don't have any concerns, look to the will of the committee. Senator Ellis, may I have a motion to adopt committee substitute version U?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt the U version of the committee substitute.
And I will object for explanation and ask Senator Olson's staff to come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Denise Lagioli, and I'm staff to Senator Olson. And the CS that you have before you makes four significant changes to the bill, and those four are the new section one, which just begins on page one, was added as intent to better guide and reinforce the primary purpose of the bill, which is to get healthcare providers out to all Alaskans, but particularly in the rural areas of the state and those areas of the state that serve the uninsured, those on Medicare, or those who have some other type of medical assistance or tribal medical benefits. So section one is completely new, and there was a slight rewording that you can see on page four, line 19, that was also added with that intent. It says, at the beginning, the full sentence says, the commissioner shall prioritize eligible sites based on the remoteness of the site and the percentage of patients treated at the site who. So the remoteness of the site was added to that sentence.
Could you give us a line number, please?
Yes, line 19 on page 4.
Okay, go ahead.
And then all of section 1. The second change is that the previous version, section 1, was removed. That section in the previous version held for loan repayments as another incentive to employ health practitioners. And it was decided that the loan repayment piece would be better dealt with more research and study, and perhaps to come back in the next legislative session if it's the will of some legislators to do so, and just to take it out of this version and go with the direct incentives. So section one was removed, and then the applicable sections that referenced section one or what section one did were also updated to reflect that change. The third change can be found on page four, lines 4 through 6. And that section was reworded. The companion bill was heard in House Finance, and that body made a very good observation, which was the previous wording directed the commissioner to make payments, and we agreed that it might be better to instead direct the department to reserve funding with which to make those payments, so that in the event they didn't have qualified people, that they would leave them vacant. We felt that was a clearer statement to the department on how to handle those situations. So that's the third change. And the final change can be found in two places. One is on page 4, lines 23 to 25. And the fourth and final one essentially implements a sunset. So that on page 4, lines 23 to 25, we are directing the department to stop writing new contracts after June 30, 2017, since they are three-year contracts. And then when you flip the page to page 5, lines 17 through 25, we further guide them to do their final report and then give an actual sunset date on those in those lines. So with that, Mr. Chairman, those are the four significant changes to this CS.
Do we have any questions on the CS? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Any further objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing none, version U is our working document. Senator Olson, you want to explain what the bill does, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I'll have Ms. Licioli come back up to the table to answer questions if there are any. But essentially, what it does is establishes an incentive program for already licensed health care providers to come to the state so they can go immediately to work and see patients, especially in shortage areas, whether it's in the urban, inner city, or in the remote parts of Alaska.
Do we have any initial questions for the bill sponsor? We have two fiscal notes in your packet. 10 fiscal note from the Department of Education and Early Development. 1 fiscal note from the Department of Health and Social Services for $2,847,300 in general funds to cover the estimated cost of incentive payments and to hire one additional full-time staff person to administer the program. We will request updated fiscal notes to reflect the changes in the CS. Public testimony has been done previously. We have any final questions, concerns? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only question I would have is the last change that we considered on page 4, lines 20, 23, 4, and 5. Is that an anticipation that will allow the opportunity for Alaskan residents to kind of become more engaged in the system, and that there would be a different approach at that point in time as we're discontinuing the new applicants but providing incentives to eligible participants? Are we assuming there's going to be some kind of transition there to a more Alaska resident kind of program?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, it is expected that the benefits from the WAMI program would start coming into play in about 7 years. So that's the reason why 2017 was chosen, so that we could continue to write contracts until then. And then that would give a two-year transition for those contracts to play out, and hopefully by then have some WAMI students that actually would be ready to come to work and see what would be needed at that time.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Any final comments from the bill sponsor?
I just want to thank the committee for hearing this bill. I think it's very important because I think because of what we've seen by the data that's been presented, we are losing the battle in the amount of patients, the number of visits to healthcare providers, and the number of healthcare providers that are coming to the state.
May we have a motion, Senator Hoffman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 139 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And we have a motion to move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, updates coming. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral. Next up, Senate Bill 74 by Senator Bernard regarding professional student exchange. This is the second hearing on this bill. We heard it for the first time on the 31st of March. The intent today is to adopt a committee substitute, have the sponsor speak to the bill, take additional testimony by invitation only, and if members don't have any concerns, we'll look to the will of the committee. Senator Hoffman, may have a motion to adopt committee substitute version U.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt CS for Senate Bill 174 / U as a working document.
And I will object for explanation and ask Mr. Peterson from Senate Finance staff to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Steadman and the committee. The CS version U that you have before you contains three different post-secondary education proposals. There is a merit-based scholarship program, a needs-based scholarship program, and an expansion of eligible students in the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, or WICHE, program. Section 1 of the bill creates the Alaska Scholars Program in statute. This program currently exists as the University of Alaska Scholars Program, but the state has never participated. The university currently contributes approximately $3.8 million from their land grant trust fund to provide scholarships to those students who graduate in the top 10% of their high school class. This program has been very successful in keeping our brightest students in Alaska. The committee substitute acknowledges the success of the program by building on the existing program to bolster it through state participation. The new program is called the Alaska Scholars Program, and it will continue to be administered by the Board of Regents. Alaskan high school students who rank in the top 15% of their class are eligible for a tiered scholarship. Students in the top 5% of their class will receive a 100% tuition scholarship at the University of Alaska. The next tier are those students who academically rank in the top 6 to 10% of their class, and they're eligible for a 75% tuition scholarship. The third tier are those students who rank in the top 11 to 15% of their class, and they're eligible for a 50% scholarship. Students who rank below the top 15% are not eligible for a scholarship under this program. The funding for the scholarships will include the continued contribution of $3.8 million annually from the university's land grant trust fund, and the remainder will come from the general fund. The anticipated cost of the scholarships in the first year will be $11.5 million, with $3.8 million coming from the university and $7.7 million coming from the state. That amount will increase each year as new classes of students enroll until all four classes are filled, and then the cost will level out to an annual cost of approximately $9.2 million in general funds and $3.8 million in university funds. The Board of Regents may adjust the amount of scholarships awarded in the event the state does not appropriate its share of the funds needed to fully fund the program. Sections 8 and 9 of the CS are house cleaning amendments to conform with the new Alaska Scholars Program. Section 8 amends AS 1443-930, which identifies what information shall be made available to the Board of Regents and when. High schools will submit to the university names, dates of birth, telephone numbers, and addresses of students eligible for the scholarship. This way, the university can more easily identify students with the same or similar name, and it makes it easier to contact these students. Section 9 makes a cross-reference to the new definition of a qualified high school. Section 12 repeals the sections of statute that refers to the old University of Alaska Scholarships for High School Graduates, which was a program that offered scholarships for dormitory rent. Section 13 is an applicability section, which states that only high school students who graduate in the class of 2010 or later are eligible for the new scholarship program. Section 14 instructs the revisor of statutes to replace the name the University of Alaska Scholarships for High School Graduates with the Alaska Scholars Program. That is all the changes that were made in the bill with regards to the merit-based scholarship program, the new Alaska Scholars Program. Sections 2 through 7 of the bill is the needs-based scholarship component. It amends the existing Alaska Advantage Education Grant Program, which closely resembles Senator Ellis's Senate Bill 33, which the committee heard on March 31st. In order to be eligible for a scholarship, the applicant must be able to demonstrate financial need in accordance with standards established in federal code. Scholarships are awarded in the amount not less than $1,000 and not more than $5,000 per year, and not more than a total of $20,000 per student. The program will continue to be administered by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Subject to appropriation, the commission is instructed to distribute $10 million annually in scholarships to needy students on a pro rata basis. Furthermore, the commission is instructed to give priority to eligible students who are pursuing a career in a field of severe shortage in Alaska, as determined by the Department of Labor. Sections 10 and 11 of this CS include the original language in Senate Bill 174, expanding the eligibility of Alaskan students in the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education to include not fewer than 5 students in each of the fields of dentistry, optometry, and pharmacy. That concludes all the changes, Mr. Chairman. Just for the members' information, it's obvious that missing from the previous version of this bill and Senator Ellis's Senate Bill 133 are the provisions for loan forgiveness. And as was discussed in the previous version, in the previous bill that we heard, we will work on a more comprehensive universal loan forgiveness program for all Alaskan students rather than piecemeal it. And in future legislatures, maybe that legislation will come back.
Okay. Do we have any questions on the CS? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. We have adopted as our working document, version U. Senator Menard.
Good morning, Senator Menard, District G. And did you just want me to comment on the CS?
Sure, just talk a little bit about the bill, and then we'll ask representation from the university and the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to come forward and explain a little bit.
Well, I'm very glad to see this being moved forward for higher education. I feel this CS accomplishes one of my goals of the original bill, and so I'm in support of it.
Okay, thank you. Diane Behrens. There's kind of, I don't know, maybe we'll bring up Wendy Redmond at the same time, because I'm not sure, they're kind of interrelated within this bill, but we'll start with Diane Behrens. Maybe you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then talk about the components of the bill you have, and then we'll ask Ms. Redmond to do the same.
Certainly. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Mr. Chair, with respect to the existing Alaska Advantage Education Needs-Based Grant, I think the changes proposed in the bill are relatively straightforward. I don't have any technical comments with respect to that.
Okay.
However, with respect to the changes to the Professional Student Exchange Program loan, I guess without having a conversation with the drafter, I'm not sure if the outcome is what was expected. As I read the bill, rather than eliminating the loan repayment benefits from this program, it superimposes the service obligation and work discharge of WAMI onto these professional student exchange program loans. And I'm not sure if that was.
And can you reference the page and area, please?
It's page 6, lines 22 to 24. The new language that says, except as otherwise provided in this chapter, the terms of loan repayment must be consistent with the terms under AS 1443-510. It's in AS 1443-510 that the service obligation is described, as well as the entitlement to a discharge of the financial obligation relative to the service.
Okay. Any other comments?
Only that in this new version, the while it sets a minimum number of seats for dentistry, optometry, and pharmacy through this program, it doesn't speak to the other fields of study that are currently supported through the PSEP loan program. And so I don't know if the intent is to simply set that minimum number and allow other participants to enter into a loan on the same terms as the individuals participating in these three fields of study or not. So that could actually broaden the scope of the loan repayment benefits under this bill.
Okay. That's your final comment?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Redmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Wendy Redmond, Executive Vice President for the Statewide University of Alaska System. I'd like to thank you, the committee, for your consideration of this financial aid bill. We've been working, particularly our students have been working for over a decade to try to bring financial aid to the forefront, and this is a giant step forward, so I really very much appreciate this, the support that you've given. I did hear, excuse me, Senator Stevens and Senator Stedman at one of your majority caucus meetings talking about your continuing interest in also incorporating, I hope this year, but certainly soon, the strict merit-based program that was included in the governor's GPS bill. And so I don't know if that will happen this year, but I'd very much encourage that as another element in the whole financial aid package that I think is particularly important for really changing the very nature of the high school curriculum that's out there. It will enhance the curriculum, get parents, schools, and communities much more involved in the process. So I'm very supportive of your continuing to enhance these programs. The needs-based is certainly a huge step forward. I very much appreciate your consideration in accommodating some of the concerns that we had in this bill. One of the things that it does is to provide us access to information that we didn't have before from the schools in terms of their names and addresses and phone numbers so that we can actually get in contact with the students. And that may seem like a small thing, but it's turned into a very big thing technically. So that's a huge improvement in this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Burns? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure who might answer the question, but do homeschooled kids currently receive the Alaska Scholars Grant at this time? Are they, no?
No, they do not, through the chair. We do cover all schools that are licensed in the state mm-hmm. or that are listed on what they refer to as the school list, so private schools, but at this point not homeschooled.
And one other one, if I may, how much does the land trust generate on an annual basis?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, right now the university is putting in $3.8 million into the program, and the trust may generate $4 million, but virtually all of it right now is going, and of course the trust, as many of your own personal accounts, has been flat for the last couple of years, so we're not generating a great deal of income on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure who to ask this of as well, but what's your thoughts on the recruitment and retention? What's the effects going to be on that by the forgiveness or the lack of forgiveness for the loans that have just been put out by the CS?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think if the provisions of the bill do what I believe they do, that it would be helpful in terms of having a higher rate of return of participants in the program to the state. Of those states that participate in WICHE, for those that have a service obligation related to their support, they have almost a 3 times over benefit in terms of their return rate. So it's very positive.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have any other questions for the two? We'll have a brief at ease. We're going to set it aside for the evening. I want to just double check the one reference that Ms. Barnes pointed out. We'll double check that, and then if there's an issue, we'll fix it, bring it back tomorrow. If not, we'll bring it back tomorrow. It's not going to slow down our floor schedule. We have any other final questions or concerns on this? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious, the on page 2, the scholarship award mentions 100% of the cost of 15 credit hours of regular tuition, and then it seems to separate that out, and I'm still trying to understand. On page 3, it separates it out that the award may be used for tuition, fees, room and board, books, supplies, et cetera, basically all of the costs that are incurred for attendance. So I guess that satisfies the concern, but we spent a lot of time trying to figure out exactly what the bulk amount would be with the other scholarships and stuff, and I didn't see that in here, so I was just scratching my head a little bit and wanting to make sure. But since you're holding it, that'll probably give us an opportunity to take a look at that aspect of it as well.
Yeah, we could have, we'll hold it overnight, and then we can flush that out.
Okay, thank you.
There's one fiscal note from the Department of Education and Early Development for $230,500 in general funds for FY11 to fund the loans. That cost increases in subsequent years. There is an updated fiscal note from the university reflecting the general funds cost of the program in FY11 at $7,732,200. So we'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. We'll go on to our next piece of labor today. We'll bring up Senate Bill 234, Senator Meyer, regarding the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. This is the third hearing on this bill. We first heard it on April 2nd. The intent today is to bring back to the committee version E. Back up and testimonies by invitation only. Then we'll look to the committee. We have representation from Senator Meyer's office. If you can come forward. We have any call-ins or anybody from the LIOs or anything? All right. Okay. It should. We have representation from Senator Meyer's office. You want to remind us what this bill does, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Josh Appleby, staff to Senator Kevin Meyer. This bill is an extension bill for the ABC board. Legislative Budget and Audit Committee had some concerns with the last audit and went for a one-year extension in order to spend the interim looking at the board and then making any necessary fixes and bringing a full extension bill back before the next legislature. There was a committee substitute adopted in your last meeting that added a couple sections, removing the executive director's ability to vote in case of a tie, adjusting the statewide database to include the subject's access to the information, and then repealing a couple sections referring to the use of minors.
Okay. Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor? We have online Shirley Gifford, Executive Director of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. If you can identify yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the CS, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Shirley Gifford. I am director for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak to the changes to Senate Bill 234. Initially, it came to my attention on the extension of the ABC board to June 30th, 2011. There have been some additional committee substitutes, and I just appreciate the opportunity to speak to those substitutes. The voting procedures, I don't have any problem with eliminating the director as a tie-breaking vote. I think I've always felt that it puts the director in a bad position of deciding how a license is going to proceed, and then working with the licensees afterwards to make those things happen. Of course, if it's positive, that's okay. But if it's negative, it's kind of a sticky situation. I think that's I think that's a good part of this bill. I think there are ways around tie-breaking votes that would be more amenable to licensees. The part where persons who would like to have access to information from the written order database, I began speaking with your office, Senator Stedman, before the session began. I was talking with Weston from your office, and I don't have any problem with that. Most of the information that is here at the ABC board is open to the public. We have a few things that are confidential, financial matters, security interests, that type of thing are held confidential for the benefit of licensees. But most everything else is pretty open to public scrutiny or public information. And it just seemed, not in line with what we do here, that we can't allow the person who's ordering, we can't allow that person to know how much they've ordered. So I think that was kind of a flaw in that bill, and I don't have any objection to that at all. We'd be happy to help persons to know what they've ordered. The part of this bill that concerns me a great, great deal is the repeal of 416-049-F and 416-060-F, which gives the ABC board the ability to conduct compliance checks. This is really an important function of the ABC board. I understand that we have improvements to make. I'm working on those improvements. A very good program. It's a program that's instituted across the country. The state of Alaska enjoys the lowest rate in the country of underage persons purchasing their own alcohol, and I think that's really a flag to raise to say we're doing very well, and that didn't happen accidentally. That happened because we have good programs in place, and the compliance check program is part of those programs that really send a message to underage persons not to drink. The alcoholic beverage industry has been doing a really good job of complying. Studies have shown that where there are compliance checks, there is compliance, and that has been proven out between 2008 and 2009, where we increased compliance checks by 42%. And whereas one would think that when you increase compliance checks, you're going to find more failures, and that has not been the case. Licensees have been doing better. With an increase of 42%, they increased compliance checks by 4%, which I think is a really excellent to say on behalf of licensees, and I've shared that with different membership committees of CHAR to let them know, way to go, you're doing a good job. We are, I understand there are improvements to be made. We've just in the past couple of weeks, in the past month, we sent out congratulations cards to those licensees who have passed compliance. And just on Thursday or Friday, I received a call from one of our larger licensees who have different branches asking, can you be more definitive so that we can offer up $25 gift certificates to their employees who pass these compliance checks? We are working with them. And when they do pass, we're trying to be more positive. In the past, when one of our underage agents would go in, they would leave, and then the investigator would come in, show their badge, say, we need that license back, and it felt like a very negative thing. So we've changed that. We now have little business cards that the agents will carry. It says, congratulations, you passed. And that way they can get their licenses back and make it a positive thing. So, say, congratulate the clerk or the server that they've done a good job. We are, I'm in the process of changing a policy where, in conjunction with compliance checks, the investigators have done inspections, and that has the appearance of, you passed a compliance check, but let me take a look around and see what else you may have done wrong. And so we're stopping that practice, and we're going to, if there is something that's seen that is wrong, we're going to pass along to the investigator who has that region to work with the licensees. I'm very cognizant of sensitivity to licensees and how they're feeling. And these are businesses. These are not criminals. They're people who have businesses who are trying to. They're in enterprise and commerce, and they want to have a good. And so we need to be more sensitive to that and pull the licensee back away from any of their customers. And we're really working on that. The enforcement unit supervisor is going to be going out with the investigators. We're going to have closer supervision. We're recording all of the contacts, and I'm working with CHAR. So I've had several conversations with Dale Fox, President and CEO of the Alaska CHAR. I'm sure we'll have further communications, and we had a pretty good meeting, and I want to improve this agency. I'm very passionate about that. I know that there is room for improvement. I do believe that repealing the laws that have gained us so much success, and I've talked to, and not all licensees feel like this is a good thing. Some licensees are feeling like, oh my gosh, you know, they depend on us to help them to keep their clerks and their servers in line with the law and the regulations. So this bill, I'm not opposed to this bill in total, but I'm very, very much opposed to repealing those two statutes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This bill has a one-year sunset date, so we'll be back here 1 year from now re-reviewing this. Do you have any questions for Ms. Gifford? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple. One being, what would be the process with a tie vote then? Would you just delay the activity till you have the next regular board meeting, or you call a emergency meeting? Do you have the ability to do that in fairly with short notice or something to make a decision that might be, you know, fairly critical? Some of them are. There are obviously transfers and suspensions and revocations of licenses.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, what we would do is if there's a member of the board not present, if there are only four members present, what we would do is we could do a telephone vote if it's a real critical issue, or we could hold it to the next meeting if it's not time sensitive. And if we have a board member who has recused themselves, we can use an administrative hearing judge. I've not approached that with an administrative hearing judge, but I'm thinking if we do have that split vote and can't get beyond the board members, then possibly we could take it to an administrative law judge.
Okay, thank you. And one other minor question is the idea that the penalty for using a false ID, I believe, is $1,500. And do you have any difficulty or disagreements between your investigators and the bar owners or the bar personnel that people, obviously, when they see an officer or somebody that they may identify, police would be most likely that are in uniform and are a bar, that they toss their ID because there's more of a penalty for having the false ID than there is for actually being on the premises?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I don't have firsthand knowledge of that. I am working with Captain Brinke and Chief Clemens, who is the president of the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police. We're having discussions around minors using identification that's not valid. I suppose that could include fraudulent or false identification, but our focus is on those who no longer have valid licenses. And Representative Ramirez has mentioned that to me on a couple of different occasions, that it doesn't seem to be enforced. And so I'm researching that. I'm looking into that. This particular issue, I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that, if youth would do that, if they would have that level of sophistication to know that, boy, the penalty's higher if I hang on to this and then toss it in the bushes. I'm not sure. Word of mouth is pretty good, though, and that's certainly a possibility.
I thought that information needed to be posted, does it not?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, yes, there are postings. It's in statute that underage persons are not allowed on the premises. So yes, that is posted. I just wasn't sure what the level of concern is in terms of the youth the underage person tossing the identification as opposed to showing that they have false identification. I don't have any figures on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Guilford? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Guilford, for your testimony today. We have one fiscal note from the Department of Public Safety showing the cost of continuing the board for 1 year at $1,432,100. Funding for the board is already included in the FY11 operating budget. We've already concluded public testimony. We have any final comments, concerns from the committee? Senator Hoffman?
Do we have a fiscal note?
Pardon me?
No fiscal notes?
Yeah, I just read that we've got one fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 234 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral. Next up, our final piece of labor this morning, House Bill 292 by the Governor regarding grants to disaster victims. This is the second hearing on this bill. We first heard it April 9th. The intent today is to bring the bill back so members can express any concerns and look to the will of the committee. We thought we had representation from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Online, I guess. Are they online? We have any questions for the bill sponsor, concerns? Okay, seeing none. We have one zero fiscal note from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We've already had public testimony. It's closed. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee pass out House Bill 292 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, we have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral. Unless members have additional comments or concerns, this concludes today's workload at the committee anyway. Next meeting will be tomorrow, 9 a.m. We'll post the agenda later today. Thank you for coming on Sunday. Meeting adjourned.